and we should then agree on what are the information that we should know, and then research that information and then combine it with international information and international knowledge and trends and make a decision. So let us just run through this quickly. You know this stuff. Cannabis has been known for 8,000 years. The plant is Cannabis sativa. The plant is a male plant and a female plant. Don't ask me to put them apart. I don't know. The Delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol is the psychotropic ingredient, the most active psychotropic ingredient, the THC. But there are many cannabinoids within the plant. Many cannabinoids have been identified. And we have also identified the receptor in the brain where the cannabinoids would go and sit in the brain. And it's mainly in the basal ganglia. Mainly in the hippocampus, memory. It was that last intoxication was good, memory, hippocampus, and also the cerebellum, and that is why we are very worried about people intoxicated with cannabis and drive, because the basal ganglia and the cerebellum and driving, it doesn't work. So there are many ways to use cannabis. The most effective way to use cannabis is smoking cannabis, because the lungs is a huge area that would absorb the cannabis very, very quickly, high levels in the blood. The peak effect will be within 30 minutes. It will last 2 to 4 hours, and that is where you get most effect. So smoking is still the preferred way of use. It's the most widely illegal drug in the world, and the potency over the past 20 years has improved tremendously, the potency by agricultural techniques. The dachau today is not the cannabis of yesterday. The young people use cannabis, and they are getting younger. And they are getting younger, which is something that I'm a good know. And as we have said, and I will reflect on that, it is the very young brain that is very, very vulnerable. The adult brain is not as vulnerable, but the young brain are particularly vulnerable to cannabis, and I will go into that. I will go into the physical stuff and later on. So just a little bit of background about cannabis. In psychiatry, I'm a psychiatrist, yes, it is addictive, no two things about it, dependency does develop, it is not as addictive as heroin, it's not as addictive as cocaine, but it's addictive, and people will steal and rape to get that effect again. It is addictive. They would do a lot, take any action to secure a supply. So this is an addictive drug. It gives you intoxication, gives you withdrawal, it gives you psychosis, and I'll say something on psychosis. Give you anxiety attacks, it gives you flashbacks where non-smoking, and then suddenly you will feel as if you had a cannabis again. And it gives cognitive impairment. That our children do not achieve at school. It does not achieve. The mean IQ are lower because of the cognitive impact. It impairs our children becoming adults and preparing themselves for life. And the old motivational syndrome, there is some conflict on this. Is there real? Is it really an amotivational syndrome that there's no energy, there's no going on? Or is it the subculture that would have been there anyway, but the motivation. Physically, and this is something that the Charles spoke on, but I just want to make something very clear. In South Africa, we've got an HIV plus TB problem. Remember that. It's not overseas where you get HIV and no TB. The HIV people, they have no immunity, and they contract TB, and we've got treatment-resistant TB, and we've got all kinds of, and we've got lots of HIV in people. And now, if you combine that with a drug-taking culture, if you combine that with cannabis, it is not good. It is not good. So the HIV and TB, a unique situation in South Africa, and cannabis has got the same negative effects on the respiratory system as cigarette smoking, the chronic obstructive lung disease. But cannabis burn with a very high temperature and the puffs, and it can give a higher incidence of mouth cancer and throat cancer and lung cancer. So it's got all the same negative effects of smoking cigarettes. And then also some of the stuff that we cultivate are infected with fungi and bacteria that would give you a fungus infection and a bacterial infection. So it is not that safe. The long-term use, and I must reiterate, on the human brain, used as medicine for whatever good reason, it is not that dangerous. I give that, it's not that dangerous. But for our young people, it is very, very dangerous. Eventually, if you smoke a lot of cannabis for a long time, you can get cerebral atrophy, you can get seizures, chromosomal damage of the babies, birth defects, impaired immunity. It is not that innocent a drug. Medicinal use, adults, well controlled, I haven't got a problem. So just a little bit about the cannabis and psychosis. The cannabis itself in vulnerable people. Most likely it is people who are genetically predisposed for the development of a psychotic illness. So those vulnerable, not all people. So some people are genetically vulnerable to develop a psychosis. Well, those people get a direct cause of cannabis could be a psychosis, a non-reality with hallucinations and a psychosis that would last for hours and days. But cannabis may trigger schizophrenia, especially those who are genetically vulnerable for the development of schizophrenia. And this is studies that, and Charles has reiterated on that, studies that has been done in our department of psychiatry. And if cannabis has triggered schizophrenia, schizophrenia is mostly a lifelong a cause. And they say there are literature that would say, if you take all schizophrenics, the whole schizophrenic population, and we've eradicated cannabis, then there will be 8% less schizophrenia in the world. If you've eradicated cannabis, there will be 8%, which is significant. So cannabis can trigger schizophrenia in the brain. The young brain is very vulnerable to cannabis. Cannabis is a neuromodulator. It regulates other transmitters, neurotransmitters. And as the endogenous opioids, as morphine. And now if it is a modulator of other neurotransmitter and you bombard it with cannabis, it is havoc in the young brain. The young brain is very, very vulnerable to cannabis, and they later may develop a higher incidence of psychotic influence, and it has a negative influence. It suppresses their learning ability and the intellectual function. Cannabis is also most often an introduction drug. It is a gateway drug. I know the arguments. Yes, but so is alcohol. Yes, I know, so is alcohol. Well, let's just say that cannabis is also a gateway drug. Legalization of cannabis, according to the world literature, I agree with Child, has not provided the world with clear, positive outcomes. There are a lot of hidden facts about legalization of cannabis. I'm talking legalization of cannabis. And I feel that we should not compare our country with the rest of the world. I think we have unique circumstances in our poverty, that our children haven't got homes, the violence in my country. No, you cannot compare my country with the rest of the world. We've got unique and specific vulnerability, especially when you come to things like HIV and TB and no work and no homes and no support systems. Please. Reality, the drug-induced psychosis is a major burden on the available psychiatric beds. I mean, at Strickland Hospital, I've been the clinical head of Strickland Hospital for 20 years. Oh, my fight for beds and my fight for medicine. And get the patient out, get one in that is more disease. Get one out, get into that more disease. What we call the toxic psychosis or the drug-induced psychosis are an overwhelming problem in our health system. An overwhelming problem. A huge burden. And if I can take away the drug-induced psychosis, I've got enough beds. But now I've got 3-4 wards full of psychotic people that has been in there because of not only cannabis, but also the cannabis and the tip and the whole poly drug use. So what are we doing today in preparation for myself? I said we are not talking about legalization today. We are not talking about decriminalization today. We are talking about medicinal use of cannabis, and I agree I would also like to get rid of the commercial industrial purposes, because I don't know what, I don't know the hemp t-shirts, and I don't know what it entails. I do not know what industrial and commercial purposes entail. I don't know. I'm ignorant about it. So I think we should concentrate on the medicinal use of cannabis. And then the three important questions, and it came out in Professor Perry's presentation. What are we going to debate? The medicinal use in what form? Are we going to talk about the smoking the plant? Are we going to talk about the dacha cookies and the bottle cook? Are we going to talk about the pill form? Are we going to talk about the that word? Dronabinol and nabilone, or are we the liquid extracts or the oral mucosal sprays and inhalers? They are trying to escape the smoking effect and the lung effects by doing vaporizing and humidification and like you show them the pens and this stuff. So what are we talking about in this bowl? I don't know. Please answer me that. And the medical use for what conditions? If you study the literature, you will see cancer, dementia, pain, diabetes, epilepsy, glaucoma, Tourette syndrome, nausea with chemotherapy, HIV, the anorexia, the multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic pain disorder, poor appetite and headaches. Would you please take note of the slippery slope problem here? The slippery slope problem, if we do not tie down fibromyalgia, if we do not tie down the nausea of cancer, if we do not tie down, what are we going to do? It's a free-for-all. It is going to be a slippery slope, and tomorrow I do it for appetite, and I do it for your headache, and I do it for your weight loss, and the, no. To me, it is a worry that for what condition, and we must place that. And then prescribed by whom? Is this going to be GPs? Is it going to be generalists, or is it going to be specialists? And people say it's going to save us cost. Is it going to be there for the worried well again, or is it going to be for all my people? It's going to be for available for all my people in the country. So is it again for the economics for the privileged few, or is this going to be for all my people? And I think that is important that we should consider. Okay, the different forms of cannabis has got different effects. There's lots of cannabinoids and there's lots of cannabidiols. So the different products has got different effects. And if we do not know, Professor Perry, we've got to find out what cannabinol, this product is effective for what disorder. So the tetrahydrocannabinol first, then leave that alone. Smoked cannabis will have the best effect because of the absorption and the availability and the very high blood levels. The FDA has approved two synthetic cannabinoids, and that is not a product of the plant. That's not a plant product. That is purely a molecule devised in the laboratory. Okay, and that is the dronabinol and labinol. The world literature, I agree again with Professor Perry, the world literature on treatment outcomes based on proper peer-reviewed research results on the benefits of treatment are unclear and poor. It is not that obvious. It is not that obvious. If we really read the academic literature, the peer-reviewed research, the real McCoy, then it is not that clear. So, again, the medical use in all those countries, and in, you said, Charles, in 30 states in the USA, legislation for medical and scientific use is on the rise, it's on the increase, and I'm an advocate for that. But proper licensing, control of the people who cultivate, the manufacturers, the distributors, the prescribers, and the specific indications is a must. It's a must. If we do not know, we have to know. We have to find out. And for that, we must research. Now, if the research is before the bill or after the bill, that is the stuff that I don't know. I'm just a clinician. So, before we approve this bill, we need to answer the following questions. Do we, clinicians, and our clients, need more effective treatment for the named disorders and thus allow progress in science and treatment outcomes? My sister now has been diagnosed with cancer and is on chemotherapy and is suffering. Of course the answer is yes. If I can get progression in science, if I can have more treatment options and more effective treatment options, we've got very good painkillers. We've got fantastic painkillers. But sometimes we need augmentation. The best plus augmentation. We can even make it better. So I cannot and I will not stop progress. But then we must know exactly what we're going to do. So, do we truly know exactly what should be researched? The effects of smoked cannabis, the liquid cannabis, the oral spray, the inhaled, the vapor, the synthetic, what are we going to research? Two, what disorders? I'm very worried that we're going to do, I've got a poor appetite, so I get a prescription of cannabis from my doctor. I'm worried about undefined pain. I'm worried about that there's going to be a slippery slope. There's been a slippery slope, and we're just going to have more and more and more diagnoses that we could prescribe this to. So I'm worried about point number two. Point number three, what product is effective? What product effectively treats what disorder? And I agree with you, the clinicians should tell us. We should do the research and say, this product for this, and this product for that. We should do the Cochrane research and see what is coming out of a proper research before we just open up something that we cannot reverse. Can our current system regulate and police manufacturers? Can our current system regulate and police manufacturers, cultivate distributors to limit total to limit the total cannabis market for medical and scientific purpose only? I cannot answer this question, but we need to know. We need to know if we can control and this. Then, can medicalization of cannabis produce foreseen and unforeseen negative results? The people out there, my community, the peoples out in my country, if we have now said this drug is cannabis is safe enough to use in the diseased people, if we get this message across, it is safe. After the public may perceive the use of cannabis as safe, healthy, socially acceptable, and increase recreational use, including in vulnerable populations, and that is what Professor Perry has told us. And the world experience is not clear on this. If you read the world literature, it's not clear on this. So we've got to be careful. So the questions that and clarifications needed, when I read the bill, do we need a bill? I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable about that. Can the MCC, the Medical Controls Council, and Good Research Ethics Committee not initiate this kind of treatment? Do we need to have a bill? I don't know. Definitions. Cannabinoids. The cannabinoids, the definition as in the bill, as it is written now, does not include synthetic drugs, because that's not a product of the plant. So that is just something that we must put right. In the envisaged action, do we aim at specialist level or at medical practitioner level? Define commercial and industrial use. I just don't know. I know you get hemp t-shirts and stuff. I don't know. somebody will have to spell out what is commercial and industrial use. Who would decide on the level of the pilot health system? Who's going to do this research? Are the MCC and the research ethics committees, are they included in this research? Point 4E, informed consent. Remember that the Children's Act, informed consent for medical treatment is down to 12 years. To 12 years. So if we say that people can, a 12-year-old child can give informed consent, he can also give informed consent to what now we said we can use it for medical. So the Children's Act has made the informed consent age for medical treatment much younger, and I'm worried about they've got the most vulnerable brain. 7A. No one shall be liable or guilty. That's not clear, that sentence. Define what can be produced and by whom. Memorandum, in the background, in the document. Legally, doctors are, or clinicians are legally, be prevented from prescribing harmless treatments. I'm sorry, that's wrong. You cannot use a word like, it is harmless. No, we cannot do that. I don't think so. Memorandum background, end of paragraph, death on a mass scale. I think that's wrong, and I think that is just plain rhetoric, using words and emotions. Memorandum 3, reduce the cost of private and public health without imposing additional cost to the state. I'm not sure about that. I am not sure about that. Who are going to pay for regulating this? what are the costs of these very, very difficult, these inhalers and vaporizers, and who's going to pay for that? Is it going to go again to those who have, and not all my people? I think we've got to have a very study on what the costs of this really will be, and not accept that this is going to not cost us anything. So, the bill on innovation should be read in conjunction with a circular that we have that we've got from the Department of Health, circular 856 of 2013, of the Western Cape to the CEOs of hospital service directors, deans, and faculty on the unique and novel therapies, where they would define what is innovative therapies and what the commission should put in place, the research ethics committees, the informed consent, the reverse, blah, 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 we should read this bill also in context with the circular 856 of 2013. So, in summarize, from my side, I've got an overall yes for the bill. Because I do not know, I have to know, and for that I have to do research. Because I want, if we could have progress in science, if we could secure more treatment options and better treatment outcomes, yes, then we must do it. We owe it to our population and peoples. To complete the document, get rid of the uncertainties, make it more comprehensive, to be clear about what should really, what we would really like to achieve. It could be huge economic benefits for our country. And the next step is to answer the necessary question as to know what is truly worth doing, as to know what is truly worth doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Kinal. As I think, as honourable members and the MRC in his presentation, there are similarities. I don't know whether members want to ask him questions, or Professor will then also assist in the response to questions that have been asked. Then when you are through with the answering of the questions that have been just give another round, just a short round to just try and see if we can then combine everything together. Honourable Mashale?
No, thanks and welcome to the presentation by the professor. I just want to go to the last where you say an overall yes for the professor.
Sorry?
Where you say an overall yes for the professor. But there's a lot of questions that you are raising, and you say you don't have answers. Is that not a contradiction?
Yeah.
For the overall yes for the bill, but you've got many questions that you don't have answers yourself, that you are saying we must still go and find answers. How then do you arrive at an overall yes without those answers? Because my view will be that let's go and find those answers. And once we've answered those answers, then we can come back and say, no, we've got the answers now. And then we can arrive at an overall yes or no, based on the answers that we found, on the questions that you've raised, which you say you don't have answers, and we still have to find answers for those questions. The second issue is that you are raising a very critical issue. One, the challenge that we have in the country of high violence, especially violence against women and children, and the effect this will have, especially when when the bill becomes a yes bill, as you are saying yes, and you are saying it will then create a perception to the general public that it is safe, it is health, it's social acceptability, and it will also increase the recreational use of the plant, because the perception that will be created by that decision will be to say to the public, now it is a public, I mean, Parliament has agreed that we can use we can use cannabis, and therefore it is safe to use, and then people will begin to use it anyhow, in any way. And the challenges of policy will be huge burden on the state, on how you regulate, how you police. Do you have the capacity to police? Taking into consideration that we've got a high rate crime in the country, do you want to add additional burden to the police to do this work and make it and add more burden to them, taking into consideration the current challenges that we have around crime and the capacity that the police is backing with in dealing with the current situation, and the perception that we have to the public that there's a high rate of crime in South Africa, and especially crime against women and children. And we add this, it's not going to create more problems if we then say we allow it. And then the issue of the effect into young people, that you are saying it has got a huge impact on the IQ of young people. And in terms of the Children Act that now allows 12 years to consent, what then, if we say yes, then are we saying, are we not creating a problem, as you are saying? That's why I find it difficult to match the some of the areas that we are raising as problematic, and at the end we are saying yes for a bill. But the issues that we are raising, for me, create an impression that it is going to be a very, very difficult process to manage it, taking into consideration some of the laws that exist, some of the rights that exist. Once you say this should be legal, it should be part of the decriminalize or legalize, or whatever term that becomes used. I was not aware that it has got a huge IQ, I think it's a left, into young people, you see. During break, I was telling other people that due to involvement at the youth stage with some other people who use DAH, I find myself indirectly using it. And I was telling people that how I wrote matric, I can't even define it. I mean, many people didn't finish the maths paper, and they said it was so difficult. And it took me 1 hour, 15 minutes to finish it, and I was out, and I got B out of it. So I had always had an impression that no, it has got a huge impact. Now I'm getting a difference. So no, it has got a negative impact into the IQ of young people. It's very interesting to know that. I thought it has got the opposite.
Okay.
I'm aware it's quite an informative and exciting and frustrating subject that we're talking about. But I just want to just sensitize members that we've got two other presentations. Not unless those presenters are going to just not now, because they are two hands, are going to say, yes, even in our presentations, there are similarities, but we'd like just to zoom onto the negative, onto the different
things that didn't reflect. I don't want us to be in a hurry. I don't want us to pepper what cracks. I don't want us to do that. In our first meeting, remember, we said we need to listen to a number of people. We need to have an intensive research before we do anything. So I'm requesting anybody who's here, including members, to take it cool. We have got a huge responsibility in front of us for the country, and therefore we can't be in a hurry, and we need to be patient. But I will, after the two members whose hands are up, I will check with the two remaining presenters what so that we are able to more engage with them. It's Honourable Maisela and it's Honourable James.
Thanks, Prof. Let's do the malapropism of Dr. Doolittle. We shall kill them provided they will not die. You said, okay, fine, you have a yes, overall yes for the bill. Provided, no, we cannot be better than our knowledge. And I suppose it's our knowledge that makes us better. So it's okay, it's malapropism. Yeah. And then we could have progress in science should we secure more treatment options and better illness outcomes, provided we know what we are doing. No? And to complete the document, get rid of uncertainties and make it more comprehensive so that we know what we are doing. And we are better than ours, our knowledge. For economic benefits of the country, provided it doesn't harm anybody, we can make more money. And so on and so on. We can go on and so on. So that is very nice. It really explains. I understand, maybe I'm psychotic, I understand better what you are trying to say here. In fact, you are just saying, and in fact, the first question you asked, do we really need a bill? The one you support wholeheartedly, we really need it. So I understand what you're saying. Maybe I can read your mind better than my own. But here, you put it very clearly that this is a non-starter. If I understand you very well, this thing is a non-starter. We don't need it. No? So that's your question. Do we really need the bill? Can we be better than our knowledge? No? And so on and so on. I appreciate that. And in fact, it stimulates my mind better than what we have been saying all along. Thank you.
James, thank you.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a procedural point. This health, as been pointed out already, this committee's mandate is to review the appropriate legal use of marijuana for medical purposes. We cannot discuss the question of commercialization and so on. That's another committee. So I'm just deaf to that altogether. Because it gets us into a huge distraction. Because if you discuss commercialization and general use, then why are we regulating, why is it legal for South Africans to have access to alcohol and to tobacco that's far more poisonous than marijuana? So I just don't want to get into that discussion here. I think it's a distraction. This is about enlarging the scope for the legal, expanded, and easier use of marijuana for medical purposes. Thanks.
Before you, Honorable James. With understanding what Honorable James is saying, I agree, but remember that you said people must come and make presentations. And in them making those presentations, they will touch on some of the things. Which are the things that we must then agree that we can't be focusing on? Trade and industry is there for all this. If that's what we are saying, we must say it. I think, and presenters are like, yeah, I think it's the second voice that's saying, no, that is not our domain. So I must not get a feeling that we are trying to, or the presenters that are going to come in, they must not feel intimidated. They must understand we will say no. Maybe in how we then say we disagree with the trade part of it, it must not create a little bit of fear. I fully agree with you. We must try and avoid issues that are going to take us the other way. But we have pronounced that we are against that. And even if a presenter is going to make that a presentation which is going to state that, it's fine. But as this committee, I think more than two members have raised that. It's going to be Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to follow on Honorable James, for those members of the public that are here that may not know the processes which you know and we know, I mean, the committee has still not even considered a motion of desirability. Whether the objects of this bill are desirable for South Africans, that is something that will come at a later stage. And that will come at a stage after all this research and questions have been asked. Do we need it? Don't we need it? My sense is from the presenters today, including Professor Pina, colleague, he didn't say the bill is a non-starter. I mean, in his own thing here on the last bill, he says we need a bill, but he's given certain cautionary advice, which the committee must take into account as we move forward. See, at the end of the day, it's a chicken and an egg situation, which I just want to repeat this question to MRC and Department of Health, whoever can answer. If we are saying there has to be research, which we agree, and if we are saying remove commercialization and things like that, which we agree as well, right? We are saying that. For that research to start, to get off the starting blocks, do we need any other kind of legislative mechanism to allow that to happen so that the researchers can use this product, which is illegal, in their research moving forward? If we are told there is the legislation at the moment, then that must be cited to say here is legislation, research can continue. If there isn't legislation, then we've got to create a mechanism for research to continue. Thank you.
We will, because I don't want us to go backwards and forwards. Do you agree, Honorable Members, that we just get an indication from the last two presenters so that when we then speak, we don't speak, not unless their presentation is completely different from the two presentations. Can I get that so that Honorable Members are able to take a decision on an informed agreement?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. May I bring my computer to the front? No, I'm actually looking at international conventions. I'm looking at South Africa, what structures need to be placed, and what is my experience with the countries that I've been negotiating with. So it's slightly different.
And Professor Ratiamani, my apologies. If I can pronounce.
Madam Chair, my presentation is covered in the presentation by the Medical Research Council and Professor Willy Pinar, except that I don't agree with the questions posed at the end by Professor Pinar. But I think the legal issues that were addressed by the Medical Research Council are appropriate. And secondly, I think we have to look at the broader issues in the continent. South Africa is not isolated from the continent. I'm the current president of the African Association of Psychiatrists, and I can tell you that most African countries do not even want to think about this process because they think our control mechanisms are poor. We don't even know how to control prescribed pain medication. I serve on the Health Committee of the Health Professions Council, and most doctors that we see there addicted to pain medication that they prescribe for their patients and themselves. Now, when you include cannabis, you're confounding issues. The second, the last thing I want to say is that we have about 85, you know, cannabinoids, and we have a reasonable balance between 9 tetrahydrocannabinoids and CBD, which cannabidiol. Now, I think we do need to do some research before we even consider a bill, because what we see in the clinical setting, I ran a ward, psychiatry ward at George Mukadi Hospital. Many of the youngsters that are coming in there have used cannabis, either on its own or in combination with other substances. But they're using the plant raw as it is in various forms. They don't know how to isolate the good stuff from the bad stuff. What's coming out in the literature is the fact that the problematic substance is the THC, by and large. CBD is works on different receptor profile. If it could be isolated sufficiently, and we know, and I think Professor Pinard has mentioned the various areas of the body where it works, where it can be helpful. That was mentioned also by Charles Perry. We would then say, having isolated this particular substance, who then monitors its control prescription, and who trains the people who are going to prescribe it? I think those things have to be in place. And of course, the last thing that the Medical Research Council mentioned is the issue of other parties that may claim certain issues in terms of the use of the substance. So I'm not saying yes or no to the bill, but I'm just saying there are problems. We need to do research. We need to look at whether, as a country, we're able to isolate the most relevant cannabinoids that can be useful in the various places, you know, epilepsy, in cancer, pain relief, in various, you know, conditions that have spasms and so on, Crohn's disease, and so there are many, almost every condition, including asthma in children and so on. There's some role, but there are specific cannabinoids. I sent a wheel of cannabis to Viokazi there that will show the different areas. I think at some stage we'll put it up. But it shows you that every part of the body is affected. Almost every disease can benefit to a certain degree to different combinations of cannabinoids. That research will take this country many years. It's going to take us a lot of money. But, and I want to just go back to the fact that we are not yet, you know, stating any positives or negatives about the bill. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
All right. No, thank you very much. I think all the three presentations are more or less the same.
Yes.
We will allow responses, and then after that, if that is fine, then allow Dr. Naidoo to take voice. He is coming from another different angle and some experiences as he has said. If then over to you, MRC, Dr. Pinar. I would imagine that you were here when members were asking questions. You will also come in and assist in the response. I would appreciate if you can be more on this side so that I'm able to see you when you're talking.
My side,
that or you can swipe. You can swipe.
Oh, okay, on this one.
Over to you. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for allowing us to discuss this. So we are medical scientists, we are medical researchers, we're from the Medical Research Council, and I want to state unequivocally that the Medical Research Council supports research into cannabis, medicinal research into the medicinal use of cannabis. And we support research into looking at the biological plausibility of medical cannabis and what indications it has for its use. We support the preclinical and clinical research to looking into the effects. We want to know the mechanism of action and for what indication and for what order. So if we say that cannabis works for multiple sclerosis, we would like to see the biological plausibility and the mechanism of action like with any other drug. We believe that we need to conduct well-designed, randomized clinical trials. They must be well-controlled, well-designed, and well-analyzed. Okay? And we also have to know the products we are using. We need good quality products, and we need to understand the dose and the mode of administration. We need pharmacovigilance. People were worried about the unintended consequences or the side effects or the adverse events or the social consequences of medicinal use of cannabis, and we need to do pharmacovigilance, what we would do in any product development pipeline. We need to understand the dose versus the toxicity. We heard about psychosis, we heard about amotivational syndrome, and we need to understand how the dose relates into the side effects that we see. So we support research, we support research into reproductive toxicity. We spoke about we heard a lot of qualitative anecdotes about the effects, and we need to know evidence. You know, we can't just talk about anecdotes. We support empirical research on it. We support that the Medical Research Council actually is the research center. We have multidisciplinary teams. We have pharmacologists, we have doctors, we have psychologists. We understand clinical research, and we believe we're the best people to be the research center. Because we can do well-conducted studies. We support other research, like desktop research, like Cochrane, and to understand some of the gaps, but we do not believe that the data that's available at the moment is sufficient enough, and we need to conduct prospective, well-controlled, and well executed trials so we can understand exactly what the use of medicinal cannabis would be. Just to clarify and correct my honourable psychiatrist here about informed consent, the Department of Health and the National Research Ethics and the Health Act strictly regulates research into adolescents and young children. We have to get special ministerial permission to do any clinical trials in people under 21. So any therapeutic or non-therapeutic trial, be it social, behavioural, or medicinal or interventional, requires very, very strict interaction with adolescents. So we can't just give unregistered products to anybody. It's well controlled by the Department of Health and the Medicines Control Council and our Ethics Committee. So please do not think that we do research in adolescents without control. We cannot do that. The Minister of Health carefully governs that. So please disregard the fact that we'll be experimenting unnecessarily on children. We can't do that. We need to understand the bioavailability. You asked about the dose, and I think at this moment in time, the bioavailability, the dose, the toxicity needs to be carefully understood, and that's why the FDA has had the issues around the dose. In terms of cancer, the MRC spends just over 30 million rand a year on cancer. It's clearly not enough. It's 5% of our budget, but we fund against the 10 most common causes of death in our country, and we would welcome a huge injection of money for clinical research. The US spends trillions on cancer research. They investigate everything from personalized medicine to immunological based medicine. We are far behind in terms of addressing it, but we do everything. We do everything from discovery to screening and surveillance and monitoring and evaluation. And we do know that it takes 20 years, or maybe if we're lucky, to take a discovery into clinical trial, into licensure. So we need to do that, and we need to continue to do clinical research and cancer research and discovery research in cancer. It's critical for our knowledge economy and for our presence in the global sphere. My colleagues will talk about the Section 21. Section 21 does allow us to use unregistered drugs in this country for use, and it's strictly governed by the Medicines Control Council, but I think Anban from the Department of Health will expand on that. And so I just want to reiterate, we support the medical research into cannabis. We're not talking about medical use because we don't know enough about it at this moment in time.
Anybody who wants to, before I allow Dr. Kule from the two doctors, any members have asked questions? If there were more comments than questions. By the looks, Dr. Kule, can you?
Thanks, Jim. So just to explain, there are two processes. One is the Section 21. And the Section 21 relates to a particular patient who has tried all the available therapies that are registered in South Africa, and the clinician believes there may be an opportunity for a product that may provide some clinical benefit to that patient. And in such circumstances, the clinician can then motivate as to what product it is and how he thinks the patient may potentially benefit from it. Once the patient gives consent for the use of that particular product, and we identify where the source of the product is, in other words, it must be a credible source. It's not something that's kind of sold through somebody's garage. It's a credible pharmaceutical source, so it's a safe product in our assessment, but not registered in South Africa. We would allow limited quantities of the product to be brought in for the particular patient. The doctor then, after a period of time, usually we give him 3 months, to then capture the clinical benefits that this product has had on the patient. And if there are clinical benefits that have been derived, the patient may get more of the particular product. We also monitor the adverse effects, and based on that, we then allow access. In the case of cannabis particularly, around 20 patients have already had access to the product using the two commercially available ones that Professor Perry put up on the screen. And so patients have had access to products, particularly in the case of pain management, where I think, as the prof had indicated, you need something after using all of the analgesics, you need something to augment your pain benefit. And so there was an opportunity to do that in those circumstances. I also want to then explain research in cannabis. So if you wanted to do a clinical trial using cannabis or any other drug for that matter, there's a clinical trials committee in the Medicine Control Council. One puts together a protocol for studying a particular drug in a condition. There are rules about how that trial must be done based on ethics and scientific research. Once the committee looks at that, they may ask some questions about design and science, because once the trial is done, it's supposed to answer a particular clinical question. If the trial is not appropriately done, it won't do that. So the committee makes sure that science is right. And once it's done, the researcher then gets approval to access whatever it is that he or she wants to research and then produce the results. So the researcher will then indicate how long the trial will take, and then they provide interim results. At the end of the research, if you want to expand to more sites and the like, the MCC will then look at that. So currently there are hundreds of compounds around that are not registered, similar to cannabis, I suppose, in some nature. We don't know how harmful they are or how beneficial they are, but research is going on in the country around them. And so the legislation currently allows that to happen. The other question that was asked, Che, if I can just answer, is around how do you get from plants to medicines in terms of production? So in most cases, research that's done identifies an active ingredient in a plant. But once you've identified the active ingredient, it's usually not economical to keep growing plants in order to extract the active ingredient. Scientists then sit in the lab and look at the molecular structure of that compound and say, what are the potential receptors? How can we synthetically make the same product? And so that's what happened with those two synthetic products. So they then said, okay, we can produce this. This would be the chemical synthesis to produce this. And then they go about doing it. But many products were discovered in plants, but you don't then keep growing plants in order to make the product, because economically it doesn't make sense to actually do that.
No, thank you, honorable members. We will then get if we're done, we'll then get the, is there an area where you want to, both of you, okay.
I just want to respond to the question about the abuse potential of medicinal cannabis. We have very good data on the abuse potential for recreational cannabis use, but that's a separate issue. And we don't have very good research evidence on the adverse effects of medicinal cannabis. So what Prof. Gray referred to, the research, more research would be, we would need to undertake more research to really understand the number of adverse consequences and how prevalent adverse consequences are amongst people who are treated using medicinal cannabis. But current analgesics that are used for, certainly for cancer pain management, are opiate-based. And we know that opiate-based medications are far more addictive and physiologically dependence-producing than cannabis-based products.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to talk to the issue that was raised about the pilot clinics, which is in the bill, and what the Medical Research Council's view on that is. Our position is we would prefer the research to be done through the Medical Research Council's cancer research centres, which we've set up 3 in the last year, I think. And I think that would be a better mechanism for conducting research rather than setting up new private centres somewhere around South Africa. So I think that would be our recommendation. They're linked to hospitals, and so they would have a good connection between researchers and patients. If we had more money to do research on this topic, we could also put out calls for requests for applications, where we would set certain questions and then ask for answers. And that could look even at things like the delivery mechanism. What is a cheap, cost-effective delivery mechanism that would work in South Africa? So we have an interest in medical devices. So these, you know, I agree with Professor Pinar. We need to make treatments available to everybody, not just to the people who can afford them. And currently the vaporizers are, you know, would cost more than R1,000, probably R2,000, and that would possibly be too expensive. So we would certainly be interested in doing that. Thank you.
I was going to finally say that we do need to investigate alternatives to some of the current medication. I have an 18-year-old daughter who has multiple sclerosis. She's writing matric. Every day of her life, she cries about a headache. I import, under Section 21, I bring in a drug, dimethyl fumarate, from the US to manage her MS. She has ongoing activity. When you do an MRI scan on her brain, you see the degradation of the myelin around her nerves. I have heard that MS, that cannabis may help MS, but I am unable to investigate this further because of the lack of controls and the lack of design of studies. And so I do think that whether it's cannabis or other alternatives, people do need cheap alternatives to chronic pain. And I can attest that having a daughter who's writing matric with pain every day is very overwhelming. So I would suggest that we also look at the evidence of alternatives so that we can manage in a cheap way people's pain, particularly fibromyalgia and MS.
We will then allow Dr. Naidu to take us through. I don't know whether you want to be seated there or you can... I can see that I think there's too much.
Yes, hot.
Yeah. What is it? There are windows here. Unfortunately, honourable members and our guests, we couldn't get a smaller room, a smaller committee room. A bigger one, my apologies. This is the effect of heat. A bigger, so we are scrambled in this one. Our apologies. I don't know whether the aircon, do you want the aircon to be on or you want to open the door? Okay, you can take us through though.
You're bigger than me. You're bigger than me. If I sit next to you, I'll hold you. You know what, this class
can
is
we,
off.
Can you please check in our documents
right
there?
I'm
told we do have Dr. Naidoo's presentation, but not in a format that he's going to reflect here. I hope he's not going to create a... Is it this? Yes. You will read through this, but you'll be using pictures. All right, let's, can you continue and then we'll see if that is not going to disadvantage members in terms of the flow and understanding. Thank you. Await, if you don't mind, honorable members, we'll await the IT section to come and, because they are being called to come and assist us.
Can I maybe continue with something in the meantime?
Do you have documents on what you're going to continue on?
I send these two documents.
I've only got this one. I don't know with members which one do they have. Is that the only copy members have?
Yeah, you have the other one. Yeah.
Others have both? All right.
And then when you get this, I'll just go through the pictures.
Yeah, whilst we are waiting for her to come and fix whatever, can you take us through?
Yeah.
Members will then be using their documents.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Excellency, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for this invitation to comment on the Medical Innovations Bill. Just to start off with, my background is in working with patients with addiction disorders for the last 24 years. I established a private inpatient facility and was involved in setting up the International Society of Addiction Medicine in the late 1990s, the American Society of Addiction Medicine, and many other organizations. I later served, well, apart from encouraging changes in benefit structures so that people with addiction can have treatment, I also got involved at Nelson Mandela Medical School in training third-year students and getting them to understand addiction and let them work with patients with addiction. Subsequently, I served on the Central Drug Authority, and then I was nominated to the International Narcotics Control Board, and I was elected at the Economic and Social Council at the United Nations in New York, and I served for 5 years, eventually becoming its president. It was a difficult 5 years because it was the time when the whole, you need to understand the big picture. The big picture is not medical cannabis. The big picture is legalization. And in every country, it has always started with medical cannabis. In the United States, which is the forerunner of this issue, it started as illegal medical cannabis schemes in states against the federal government, against the FDA, against the AMA, against the American Psychiatry Association. Obviously, in the last few years, you know what has happened, and I think my colleagues have covered that. The situation with Netherlands, where the whole idea in the Netherlands was harm reduction, there was a very high incidence of intravenous heroin use, and the logic was that if you allow people to use cannabis, that maybe your heroin use will reduce. But however, the Netherlands also is looking at the folly of that kind of policy. Many other countries have followed suit, and many of our other countries in some way or the other have looked at medical cannabis, looked at legalization, etc. So currently in the world, there is one country only that is totally in contradiction with the 1961 convention, which South Africa is signatory to, and that's Uruguay, which has authorized now cannabis for the use for recreational purposes. The United States federal, the federal government technically is in violation because one part of the convention says that you need to apply your convention over all your territories. So because of its federal structure, it looks like, and it seems that there's difficulty in managing its own states. So I just want to go through a little bit of this, and I want to say that the last report which I signed off for the INCB was published, was launched in March of this year. And I asked for a special topic to be discussed, and that special topic was the control measures applicable to programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes pursuant to the 1961 Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. And I think it's important that we look at what is the legislative structure at a international level, and all countries that are signatory to the conventions are supposed to translate that structure into their national level. At the moment, the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime and the Commission on Narcotic Drugs is looking at reviewing what they call the model law. So, I've actually not put too much of words on my slides because I thought talking is better and maybe just being able to get you to know what's happening on the international level. I would, as a South African, I would not like to see my country being used. At this moment, there is a major, major lobby throughout the world which is influencing academics and influencing very significant personalities to be able to look at the end result. Unfortunately, the academics and other personalities are really being recruited for an end game which I'm going to describe to you just now. Unfortunately, they come in with good intention. So, I will read this just now, but let me just read my first presentation. I said the bill as it stands is ambiguous and lends itself to contradiction. It is termed the Medical Innovation Bill. Now, if you look at the recently in the United Kingdom, there was a Medical Innovation Bill. I'm not sure if people are familiar with that. And that Medical Innovation Bill is different from our Medical Innovation Bill. And there's a simple logic in that one. The simple logic is there is something now in Big Pharma which is called orphan drugs. Orphan drugs are medications that are made for very rare diseases. And rare diseases, therefore, you won't have number of participants for a clinical trial. And because you don't have number of participants for a clinical trial, the Medical Innovation Bill was suggested and mooted to be able to say, we will allow multidisciplinary teams to get together and say, for this patient who's got this rare disease, we will try a certain medication depending on the multidisciplinary team. It is not intended. It was intended, but it was actually vetoed because it should have never been intended for diseases where there are large cohorts or large number of patients. For example, cancer. If you have cancer, there are many patients who have cancer. So you don't need a medical innovation bill for that because you can do a random clinical trial, which is covered by our existing laws and the UK also. So I think that's where they are stuck. So that's where I would support a medical innovation bill in that kind of scenario where you have rare disease, you don't have cohorts, and you need to allow doctors to be able to use medication and clinically assess it in that situation. However, that's a little different from this bill. So we are terming this the Medical Innovation Bill, yet it extends its mandate, as our colleagues have said, to include commercial industrial applications without defining these applications. It is clearly focused on cannabis legalization, which is in contravention with the definitions of the United Nations 1961 Convention, as amended by the 1972 Protocol, which South Africa has signed. and which restricts cannabis to medical and scientific purposes. Well, not really only cannabis. Any controlled substance is restricted to medical and scientific purposes. With Article 28, which is the establishment of a national cannabis agency that becomes a central repository of cannabis that may be offered for manufacture and production and scientific use for cannabinoid products or products from the cannabis plant. Countries developing such agencies must accede to the system of estimates as per the United Nations Drug Conventions. And cannabis cultivated for industrial purposes, example hemp, are not included in the 1961 convention. So having a separate law for a situation like hemp, which has very low, it's the same plant, but a very low THC content. And if you look at hemp growing in the wild fields, they usually grow hemp very tall, and cannabis grows very out. So it's very difficult to grow, have a hemp farm for industrial use, which has low cannabis content, and therefore is not abusable as such for industrial purposes. There's really no problem with that. Our problem is with the cannabis contents which are higher, which is the bushes that grow a little wider. So the bill seeks to legalize the cultivation and trade of cannabis products using the medical use as a Trojan horse. It confuses cannabis as being similar to common chemicals like bicarbonate of soda in one sentence without recognizing that cannabis is a dangerous drug, and that is why it is controlled. It's not bad because it's controlled, it's dangerous, and that's why it's controlled. It further portrays cannabis as being in the public domain, which really is illegal. Cannabis is an illegal drug. And that document and that sentence is really an affront to current legislation. It is clear the supporters of the bill as it stands are focused on widespread cannabis legalization. The bill creates an opportunity to get one foot in the door towards legalization for recreational use. And I want to go back and I want to say, I would not like my country and well-meaning citizens...
Sorry, Doc. Don't come closer to the mic.
Okay, thank you. I would not like my country and well-meaning citizens who have good intention to provide medical products to be taken into a system which opens the door to put pressure on different areas. So there's no current best practice, because I think there's a statement in the bill saying current best practice. There's no current best practice as to the use of medical marijuana. Save that medical marijuana schemes in some states of the United States of America, which are uncontrolled and are in violation of federal law. And that, in many countries, have misinterpreted. And I think this is where the big problem has been. In the days of Nixon, the whole drug legislation was misinterpreted into a war on drugs. And really, when I looked at the whole issue of the conventions are really a human rights convention. There's total misinterpretation. And all my negotiations with the White House and UNODCP gets them to start understanding that if you guys interpreted the conventions properly, you would have had a more health-directed approach to this issue. So what has happened? The major lobbies that are looking at legislation have cottoned on to this idea of the war on drugs and says, let's move from war on drugs to legalization of drugs. When really what should have happened, medical cannabis schemes or agencies should have been set up a long time ago and we wouldn't have had this problem. So now you would find that no one would be able to say now that there is no cannabis products for medical use. So I suggest that if we start looking at this issue, we should be in compliance with the convention. The conventions allow for medical cannabis agencies to be set up for medical and scientific purposes with good parameters, and which I will talk about here now. So I want to refer you to this special topic, and I want to read through this. So there's a few paragraphs. The Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs of 1961, as amended by the 1972 protocol, limits the use of narcotic drugs, including cannabis, to medical and scientific purposes. Like other narcotic drugs under international control, cannabis is subject to a variety of control measures aimed at preventing its diversion into illicit channels and its abuse. In recognition of the risks of cannabis abuse, the substance has been subjected to the highest levels of control under the Single Convention through its inclusion in Schedules 1 and 4. the latter of which contains substances particularly liable to abuse and to produce ill effects. When you're listening to Schedule 1 and 4, do not relate it to South African schedules. Our schedules are a little different. We are in Schedule 6. The single convention allows state parties to use cannabis for medical purposes. I think it's covered. Reflecting concerns about abuse and diversion, the single convention establishes an additional set of control measures which should be implemented in order for programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes to be compliant with the convention. The board reminds all governments in jurisdictions having established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes or considering to do so, that in addition to reporting and licensing obligations applicable to all narcotic drugs, the single convention requires that states having such programs comply with several specific obligations. Pursuant to Article 23 and 28, Article 23 is talking about the opium agencies, which relate to the cannabis agencies of the single convention. States wishing to establish programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes that are consistent with the requirements of the single convention must establish a national cannabis agency to control, to supervise, and license the cultivation of cannabis crops. The obligations incumbent upon national cannabis agencies include the designation of the areas in which cultivation is permitted, the licenses of cultivators, the purchase and taking of physical possession of the crops, that means the government takes the crop physically. They also have the exclusive right of wholesale trading and maintaining stocks. In addition, governments must work to prohibit the unauthorized cultivation of cannabis plants and seize and destroy illicit crop whenever the prevailing conditions in their territories render such measures the most suitable course of action in order to protect the public health and to prevent illicit trafficking in accordance with Article 2 and 22 of the Single Convention. Finally, governments must adopt such measures as may be necessary to prevent the misuse of and illicit trafficking in cannabis leaves in accordance with Article 28 of the Single Convention. The board has reviewed the issue of cultivation of cannabis for personal medical use and has determined that in the light of the heightened risk of diversion it represents, such cultivation does not meet the minimum control requirements set out in the single convention. Accordingly, the board has consistently maintained the position that a state which allows individuals to cultivate cannabis for personal use would not be in compliance with its legal obligations under the single convention. And this, on the aside, is what happened in Canada, and now they're revoking because they allowed people to do personal usage, and now they're changing the law. In addition to the risks of diversion cited above, allowing private individuals to produce cannabis for personal medical consumption may produce and present health risks. In the dosages and levels of THC consumed may be different from those medically prescribed. The board reminds all governments in jurisdictions that have established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes that are considering to do so about the aforementioned requirements of the convention. The board notes that the control measures in place under many existing programs in different countries fall far short of the requirements set out above and encourages all governments in jurisdictions that have approved or plan to implement such programs to take measures to ensure that these programs fully implement the measures provided for in the single convention. And these are aimed at ensuring the stocks of cannabis produced for medical use are reserved for the patients for whom they are prescribed and not diverted into illicit channels. The board urges all governments in jurisdictions that have established programs for the use of cannabis for medical purposes to ensure that the prescription of cannabis for medical use is performed with competent medical knowledge and supervision, and that prescription practice is based on available scientific evidence and consideration of potential side effects. And the board reiterates its invitation to the World Health Organization to evaluate the potential medical utility of cannabis and the extent to which the cannabis poses a danger to human life in line with the mandate of the board. And the WHO has now set up a committee under William Charlton, who is from the Netherlands,
to be able to look at the issue of cannabis, and so that will come under review soon. And to go back to my original document and say that there is another issue. The proponents of making cannabis available also bring up the issue that there are many cannabis users who are languishing in jails, and they say it's about vulnerable populations. And I want to point something out. Many countries have misinterpreted the UN drug conventions and have spent disproportionately more resources on supply reduction while neglecting the drug problem as a health issue. And this disproportionality has been the argument of legalization lobbies that use the ill-defined term war on drugs to vilify the violence and incarceration of vulnerable people. Now, one of the places that I visited is Venezuela. Now, Venezuela is the second highest homicide rate in the world. But Venezuela does not grow much drug. Its neighboring countries do. So the idea that drugs make people violent is really, I don't think it's a starter, but drugs may be dangerous in violent territories. That's an issue. So Venezuela has really created a structure where 1% of all profit from private companies go into a special fund, and they've created one of the best prevention programs I've seen in the world to be able to get their children to become resilient to drug use. We have to be really practical. It's going to be very difficult to stop any drugs. What are we doing to protect our children? I'll touch on that just now. So in Article 36, recommends less severe sanctions and depenalization of drug use. That is currently legal. We can criminalize, but we do not have to penalize. And Article 38 recommends treatment, prevention, reintegration, and training of health professionals in the area of drug treatment. And this area has been neglected also, and it is one of the resolutions that we passed at CND this year, to be able to get countries to be able to set up agencies to be able to train medical doctors in the field of addiction science, which is not happening in our country. So patients with addiction are being treated by anyone, and I really mean anyone, because if you've got a house that you can't pay the bond in, the Department of Social Development is approached for a license, and they are licensing the buildings. They're licensing a program which you can download off the internet, but no one is checking the people working there. And I want to make that point. Medical innovations per se can only be justified in the case of rare diseases that do not aggravate sufficient participants in random clinical trials to assess efficacy and safety. This, if necessary, may be the only justification of such a bill. With protective clauses, example, multidisciplinary team decision making and case recording. However, for the diseases, as I said, which have sufficient trial participations, I don't think this falls under medical innovation. Since the aim of the bill is to create unimpeded access to marijuana cultivation, because that's what's mentioned in the bill, that people can cultivate themselves, production and use, in the absence of any evidence except anecdotal, it places the vulnerable patient and the caregiver at a disadvantage while protecting the medical professional, quacks and mavericks. It also will prevent law enforcers to differentiate between licit medical marijuana on the street and illicit cheaper marijuana on the street, thus facilitating illicit trafficking and the proceeds of organized crime. And I think that's the end game. Because if your policeman now knows that marijuana on the street may be legal, he's got no right to stop you. And it's happening at the moment where we know there are parallel imports coming to this country, there are people who are bringing in drugs into this country who are not registered in South Africa. Getting one invoice from Switzerland or the United States, showing it to the drug inspector, but really selling cheap products under the guise of this one invoice. The bigger problem that we're going to start seeing is the concept of non-communicable diseases, which is a General Assembly issue, where a big amount of attention has been placed on diabetes hypertension. And one of the things that we are really concerned about now is counterfeit drugs. And this is the main counterfeit drugs for hypertension, diabetes, cancer. So we've really got major threats coming to our borders. In the United States, illicit medical marijuana schemes evolved into recreational cannabis legislation in some states because it's all about softening this blow. leading to the provision of financial services now to cannabis retailers. Now, the federal government, which does not agree to the cannabis schemes, have been forced to issue directive to the banks to allow cannabis retailers to open bank accounts. And that is the whole move. So I think we must move out of our naivety. The lobby for the cannabis legalization availability is very strong. It is greater than all our whole budget that is looking after substance abuse. When I was in social development hearing, Prof, you were there, my picture was on the screen, you know, as the bad guy. And really, I saw that presentation in three other countries. So it's not a South African presentation. This is a generic thing that's been sent throughout the world. It's almost get one country in every continent. And this is Africa. And this is South Africa. And this is the most lucrative country here. South America is Uruguay. The East is actually keeping very quiet, but they're against us. When I was speaking to the Japanese, they said, we're against this. I said, why don't you open your mouth and talk about it? Because you have 2016 UNGAS coming up, where everything is coming up for review. So I think it's very important that we protect the vulnerable, and that's really where I'm coming from. By far the greatest... Sorry. Here again, there's surely the dilution of cheaper illicit marijuana in the illicit state-sponsored scheme. So cannabis use is increasing in the United States. By far the greatest impact will be to public safety, example, drug driving and lower harm perception in youth. My patients tell me, Doc, you mean medical marijuana, this thing is good, can I have that one? I said, what you mean? It's marijuana. He said, you mean the one I'm taking is good? So we have a young population, unfortunately, which cannot be compared to the young population of the United States and Europe. The interpretation of what we're doing and our communication to the young people and to our South African public is very poor. There is more communication showing that cannabis is good than any communication left to one or two NGOs to be able to pass the message using their least qualified staff to pass the message. And I think this is really an indictment of how we're looking after our young people. We're really letting them down, because if you want to measure the wealth of a country, you must measure the young person. By far the greatest impact will be to public safety, drug driving, low harm perception. Youth have decreased brain function compromise with reduction in IQ scores. Now, IQ is not just about intellect. It's a combination of intellect, memory, and cognition. This is a spec scan. This is an 18-year-old, 3-year history of 4 times a week cannabis use. Now, a spec scan is a single photon emission computerized tomograph. It measures brain activity. It does not measure brain structure. You know, CAT scans and MRIs will tell you brain structure. When someone comes to me and they say my MRI is normal, I say, that's great, so why are you acting silly? Because your behavior comes from the brain. If the structure is normal, I'm not interested. I'm a rehab man. I want to know how your brain's functioning. So that is the underside of the brain. Now, those two areas on top, those gaps, it doesn't mean there's no brain there. It means it's hypofunctioning. It's less than 55% functioning. And those two areas on top control what I would call common sense. And common sense is the prefrontal cortex. It controls a few things. One, motivation. So that's where your amotivation syndrome coming from. Two, cognition, the process of information. Three is personality, how you talk, how you walk. Four is judgment. Now, judgment is so important. So when you talk about gateway drug, what is gateway drug? Well, there's two areas. One is you're causing hypofunctioning of the brain, and the person can stop one drug, but he'll need another drug to take over the functioning. So when you talk about chemical dependency, people talk about alcohol, cannabis, heroin, and cocaine. But really, the brain is dependent on the chemical dopamine. Alcohol causes the release of dopamine, which makes this function. So the brain is dopamine dependent, which would mean why today in the addiction field, we don't talk chemical dependency anymore. We don't talk alcoholism anymore. We talk addiction.
because it explains that ball, when it's rolling down the roulette table, when it's just falling on 14 red and you got your money, that little blip of dopamine is what gets you addicted. And we know that a lot of gamblers are compulsive and go and get addicted to gambling. They don't want the money. Their intellect says they want their money, but when they get their money, they waste their money. Very few of them use it properly, because the dopamine peaks in patients with addiction, causes temporary paralysis of the common sense of the brain. Which means you'll see patients with addiction are usually very good. They're good businessmen, they're good at this, they're good at their academics, they're masters at a lot of things. They even run countries. But what happens? What happens? It's a very simple thing. Addiction is a temporary loss of common sense. So the intellect is there, and the intellect is preserved. And that's why when you speak to patients with taking cannabis, they have very good intellectual arguments that you may even start believing it. You will actually go this flow, and then eventually when you're at home, you'll realize, the basic starting point was flawed. I'll just show you another. This is a 28-year-old. Now, why I brought this up, because most people have the idea that it's only young people affected. The problem is, it affects different people. A 57-year-old physician was still practicing. Prof, you're still practicing. Because you only need a few things. If you're 57 years old, 3 years older than me, and if you're practicing for 30-odd years, you don't really need much intellect. You just need to repetitively do this thing. For example, what we've seen in the education department, teachers, when you start changing your education curriculum, your teachers can't learn new things, they go for boarding. It's costing a lot of money. We need to start repairing the brain. And that is what 21st century addiction rehabilitation is, brain repair. Not counseling. Counseling is done in the church. Rehabilitation centers are supposed to repair the brain. And there's a big difference between therapy and counseling. So this is a person who stopped cannabis use. So stopping cannabis use doesn't mean the brain repairs on its own. And what a lot of people do, they cross-addict. They cross-addict. I had a lady come to me 2 years ago in the evening. She asked the most remarkable question. She said, "Dr. Naidu, I heard you work with addictions. My husband has stopped drinking many years ago, but I want you to start him drinking again." And I said, "Why?" She said, "He's very handsome now. And he looks good." And I said, "So, you should be happy." He said, "No, Dr. Naidu, he's having affairs. When he drank, he sat in the house." So I think it's important to understand the concept of cross-addiction. Sex addiction is a major problem, which is linked to what one of our esteemed colleagues mentioned earlier, the issue of poor respect for women. If we have poor respect for women and children, we're going to have a problem. Addiction is really climbing.
Doc, we have got only 5 minutes left.
Okay. No problem. So I showed you the slide. I thought showing you pictures is much better. I mean, these are real live people. Okay. So some territories are making a major investment in reducing the harm of other regulated products like tobacco and alcohol. Yet seem oblivious if regulated cannabis markets are established. Even if restricted, youth have always increased usage as more drug becomes available. Prevention and treatment services are limited in South Africa. So I think we have a very poor infrastructure when it comes to addiction, our addiction response. So adding to the load without being able to help people who are really fall prey to this is really, I think, irresponsible for us. But teams are recruited from other professions without understanding rehabilitation protocols, rather minimizing them as detoxification and counseling centers with detention. And this is leading to two important developments. One, the increase in psychiatric diagnosis with patients are placed in inappropriate treatment settings. And I think Prof is saying that there's no space in your psych hospitals because your addicts are sitting there when they should be sitting somewhere else, which do not promote development and reintegration, but rather stabilization. Secondly, another area, the area of harm reduction. In South Africa at the moment, there's a study showing 64,000 intravenous drug users. And one of the reasons for that is we do not even have medication for the big scourge that is around, which is heroin addiction, which is bunga and sugars, etc. So everyone's moving to HIV production with needle and syringe exchange issues, but no one is really looking at the patient who's the addict. And if you look at the family histories of the patient with addiction, the problem is poor engagement by their fathers in childhood. Therefore, patients with primary addiction disorders stand the risk of not being provided with appropriate strategies to develop and recover as the number of addicts increase daily. Current medical practices allow for new products to be developed for illnesses without the need for an additional bill. If products from cannabis are to be used for medical purposes, it is difficult to justify in a smokable form with unreliable dosage of unreliable THC concentration and open the door to increased hybridization in an unsupervised setting. I was reading an article now. When you say that cannabis can be used for, let's say, for nausea and vomiting, if you have to say that and put that as an indication, a judge in New Mexico actually overturned the ruling, because the ruling was that the understanding was that you first try medication for nausea. When it doesn't work, then you go to the cannabis products. But the judge said, I'm sorry, I'm overriding that, because in your package you said it's okay for nausea, so he doesn't need to try anything else. So I think our colleagues were actually mentioning this, that we're very careful in how we define these issues. So we have Sativex and Marinol available, etc. In conclusion, there's a worldwide synchronized and concerted effort to recruit unsuspecting people to influence and coerce the common man to create political pressure for cannabis legalization. The current draft is poorly formulated and confused, but rest assured, the pressure for legalization will mount. So this is an opportune time to discuss. We must remember that we have to protect our vulnerable youth, and as with tobacco and cannabis, the big cannabis industry will not subsidize the health budget to deal with the complications and consequences of increased availability. The lay public need more information about drugs and usage, not just the ineffective don't do drugs message. Young people are using drugs as a solution for improving mental well-being. Our Honorable Sir, if I have to give someone with that brain, which has hyperactivity, if I give him cannabis, it will make that brain work normal. When the cannabis wears out, those holes get bigger. Next time he needs a higher dose. That's how addiction works. So cannabis in a person who's got ADHD, for example, and if you give him cannabis, he'll concentrate. But he'll forget next week what he learned last week. And memory is a big issue. And we must worry about the biggest scourge that's coming for mental health, which is not major depression and bipolar, but the issue of dementia. And when dementia is going to cause a major, major stress in our life. Last sentence. With regard to cannabis, research to support medical application are inseparable tools. So I support medical research, so I'm quite in agreement with Professor Parry on this issue. And I'm available for any comments or any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Naidu. We will then ask questions from members. I will understand that maybe it's the first time to come in front of the portfolio committee. Protocols say that you will have to learn protocols of parliament, that you speak through the chair.
Thank you.
So a little bit of ABEX.
Members,
quite an interesting subject. Any questions? Mindful of time. Honorable myself. Honorable Chaba.
Thank you, Prof, for enlightening us about those goals. Now, I think the best or the most important battle is to make sure that there are no holes in anybody's brain. And that is a task and a half, to make sure that people don't have these holes, because if you keep on filling them and then they become bigger instead of becoming smaller, then it's a serious, serious problem. So it goes without saying that for the love of our country and our children, we should really do something about it, and not what we did with AIDS, which became a bigger problem. one we must prevent from happening. If it's happening, we must try to squash it before it becomes a real, real problem. And maybe this is just a beginning, because after this, they'll be having cocaine, they'll be having heroin, they'll be having all sorts of things, because this other one would now change. You didn't give them that high. The hole would become bigger and bigger, close it with a bigger show. I'm scared to think about that we couldn't even do something that is doable. Now, if we have a bigger one and we create it ourselves, maybe through benign neglect, or maybe through some slay of the hand type of thing where people come, you know, beware of the Greek who come bearing presence, then we are creating a bigger problem for the nation. And I 100% support what you are saying, that let's be aware of the Trojan horses and not allow them even near, because they were made through war and they were meant to win the war for the enemy. So we should not accept that. Thank you.
Honorable Ndaba, Honorable James.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I want to welcome the report, Chair. It was very informative. And, you know, it has answered most of the questions that I had as an individual. Because, Chair, I had my own suspicions, you know, but I couldn't talk about them. Because, you know, sometimes when there are things that are presented before you as a member of parliament, you become suspicious. That, but... You know, from my health experience, you know, I was wondering exactly what this bill is entailing and what is it that is trying to address exactly. Whether are we legalizing marijuana or we want to open the door for other people to go and sell dacha legally or whatever. You know, I heard many things. Whether somebody somewhere is the one who wrote this thing and presented and, you know, wanted to use maybe the late member or whatever. You know, I had many questions, but I think with your presentation, my suspicions and my, you know, I'm answered. Thanks.
Honorable James?
Could you deal with a slippery slope proposition? Is there an example in the world, or examples in the world, where medical marijuana is appropriately regulated and legal for use, and where that's spilled over into the general population in terms of general use? Is there such an example? I mean, what's the empirical evidence around the slippery slope claim that you make?
Madam. Thank you. We can look at it in two directions. The initial direction was California, where medical marijuana facilities or dispensaries were created many years ago. And no doctor was prepared to put his signature on a prescription for it. So they altered the initial statutes and said, if a doctor could recommend it. So a doctor would recommend without any written issue, and that would be, look at the litigation issue, protecting himself. And they would go to these marijuana dispensaries, which were like Starbucks. There were so many of them. Okay, and they weren't really medical marijuana legal schemes, but they were running as medical marijuana issues. And that's moved from there now right to medical marijuana and moving to recreation. So that's one direction of it. Then if you look at other countries, for example, in the UK you have manufacture of this thing, there is no spillover on this issue. But if you have your structures in place properly, and if you don't call it medical marijuana, for example, when we use methadone for patients or pepidine, we don't call it medical opium. You see, so we must create a disconnect in people's mind. They mustn't be thinking that marijuana is this, because what really the agenda is, a lot of people are pushing for, is to smoke the herb. You know, some people with good intention are having the extracts, and the abuse potential there is very low. So that's why I said there are a lot of well-meaning people who are taken into good arguments, who are agreeable, but they have been used in the long measure. And that's why if South Africa has to go that way, we need to be very clinical, scientific about it, structured, well done, and we need to be able to get to the position where we say, this is dronabinol, this is not medical marijuana, because our people in the street and people, the common man, don't understand that difference. So therefore, it's totally legal to be able to go there. And if it's well structured, there's no spillage. There shouldn't be a spillage, you know. Because if you look at the THC, like look at Sativex. It's got a combination of THC and it's got dronabinol, I think is the one. And then they also, the combination. Say if you have more THC, it becomes a little bit high, less THC. So you have these different concoctions. And I think this is what MRC can look at, working on those issues and finding new extracts. Because I think there's much more that you can find. Is coming up. NIDA, which is naturally from the U.S., has sponsored the Israeli. I think one of his studies is, and Israel has done a lot of work on this issue. But in Israel, they are selling the herb. Now, what has happened over the years, the THC content is rising. So it's a massive industry. At the moment, people in South Africa are already selling the dispensers and vaporizers. Thank you.
Chair, just a very quick question. I wonder whether the good doctors at some stage can say, let's ban cough syrups in South Africa because it's addictive. Mm-hmm. Let's ban benzene because people smoke benzene. Let's ban petrol because young people, and glue because they sniff glue and do all sorts of things. We see that. But also, I wouldn't like us to leave this meeting with a misconception that the prime mover of this bill was the Honorable Dr. Ambrosin. Was under any influence by anybody when he put this bill on the table. He had a personal circumstance, he suffered from cancer, we know what he went through, and it is because of his own research that gave rise to this bill. Whether we agree with the contents of this bill and amend it or whatever is another matter for the committee to deal with, but I would like that misconception to be cleared here and now. Thank you.
James, your hand was up.
Just a quick question. Can you tell me who would have an interest, commercial interest, which series of pharmaceutical companies would see this as an opportunity to make lots of money? It's not a bad question, because often those would be precisely the companies which fund the research, which is very expensive and government can't fund it alone. So if it's a private public partnership in terms of research and funding it.
Sorry, Honorable James, there's an order.
I think that's not what we are here for. It's a point of order. You can't ask the prof to name people and that they did this. And he explained what the dangers are. It's for us to tackle with those things. I think it's not fair. Thank you.
I wouldn't expect you to respond to that question, yes. But also, other from Honorable Singh, if I understood, it was more of a comment trying to clarify a particular view that he has picked up. So, I don't know. I think we are done with responses. Is there something that you want to say?
Thank you, Madam. There's just one thing I wanted to clarify. I think earlier one of our colleagues from the MRC did mention that opiates for pain is addictive. That is not true. Opiates are not addictive when used in authentic pain. When you're using opiates in non-authentic pain, it's addictive.
That's very true.
And I think that's very important, because in South Africa we have a big problem of narcotic tablet overdose. In the United States, it's a big problem. So controlling medication is really a problem. Thank you.
I think we have been discussing a very important subject. And in listening to all presentations, I'm happy that we have been joined by two psychiatrists. Mental health has always been my passion. My passion because I don't think that as the country, not before 1994, but before and after. In fact, before, mental ill patients were treated as they were locked up somewhere. If you're mentally ill, you'll be locked up somewhere. There was never a program that was put in place to understand what is it, and also assist communities in picking up, even families for that matter, in picking up that, well, my child may be bipolar, my child may be, and that I want every one of us in this room to understand. People always think that we always like to always refer to the past. Our past is teaching us how to move forward and what are the things that we are. And health, mental health in particular, is one of the sectors, in fact, of the disease that when people were diagnosed, there was always a stigma attached. Secondly, and I always say, Prof, even if psychiatric, if you are trained, even if you are paid $1 million a month, I will never, because we were told that all of us here in this room, there's a thin line between sanity and insanity. It's very thin. Psychiatrists will differ, and I always say I wouldn't like to work in a psychiatric institution because I will end up being one of these. You have raised an important matter that on how we behave, and it's some of the issues that they have been taken for granted by everybody. But in your presentation, there is something very profound. A sentence in the last page: the lay public need more information about drugs and usage, not just the ineffective don't do drugs usage. And in all psychiatric institutions, you'll see don't do drugs, you'll only see a poster. I think this sentence, in my view, is beginning to say all of us must come up with a program on how best we empower our communities. And the Department of Health, maybe, not only the Department of Health, let me not start there, us as the legislative arm of the state has got that responsibility. As I was listening to everybody, I then began to say, all of us are victims in one way or another. Mm. All of us are victims in one way or another. And how best to ensure and encourage people to speak up. If we say a woman who is abused must talk, it then means drug users and addicts, they must talk. But in them talking, we must come up and assist them. Our youth, right across, are victims of it. And when they are victims, they then become vulnerable. And nobody in this room can say, my child will never be subjected or will never be a victim. So it's quite a huge and a comprehensive subject. It doesn't only need health, it doesn't only need social development, it doesn't only need law enforcement, but it needs the entire community, irrespective of class and race, and gender for that matter. So, as we were engaging with the subject, I thought that it's important that I start there because it's quite a very powerful subject. And rest assured, some of us in this committee, we're going to ensure that we go all out, because in our communities,
we do witness. In our communities, Dr. Naidu, we do witness the behavior patterns of young people and older people who are using drugs. When we were still students, we were told, Prof, that a person who smokes dagga, why they kill a lot, is because they see when they look at you, you are like a small, you are small up to a size of an ant, and they want to grab. And when you look into their behavior, you really see that, oh, okay. And it can't be that people who are using, in particular, dagga, they are not aided. They are a danger to society and to themselves and to everybody. The other part that is very important, that initially when we listened to the presentation, all of us agreed that research is to be done. And again, today, as I was listening, also talking to that. But it must be a research that is going to be taking us forward. It must be a research that is going to empower us. It must be a research that is going to be speaking to do's and don'ts. It must be a research that is going to make everybody understand why it is important for that research to be done. And I agree with Honorable Singh and whoever. It's not about now we're saying yeah or no for them. Now we are empowering ourselves so that when we come to that point, we know when we say it's not desirable and why we say it's not desirable. If it is, why you say it is. So everybody in this room must have that understanding. The last part in my view, which is more, I always say without any fear of contradiction, health has got its own ideological views and politicians. I always become worried, maybe because of democracy, I always become worried when we are more told about studies of America, Canada, and whatever, we are never told about stories in Africa. And I'm challenging the researchers, do research and studies in Africa. Mm. We are Africans. We are the victims as Africans. Not talking about South Africa. I'm talking about Africa as a whole. And therefore, the research, when you come back, I'm challenging. Give us the studies, compare, because we must have that comparison of the West and Africa. I think that is very important, because it is an African child. Not that other children are not there. It is an African child that then becomes a victim. My niece was very hyper. She is staying in, she's in California, and she came to visit us again when her grandfather passed on. But I observed something very strange, and it's what, as health workers, we always say, though, that people that are smoking, that have got a high appetite of that they do not believe in. They eat every time, and what I observe that every time he has gone to take a puff, about an hour or so, she wants food. She's at on everybody's day. But that's why I'm saying we're all victims. But for us to ensure, and I will labor on this point, it is not about, we must ensure that our debate is simplified, our research is simplified for that ordinary parent who is in the deep rural area, whose children are victims of this in urban areas, in peri-urban areas, whether you are rich, whether you are poor. Unfortunately, we understand English, but for them, why I'm saying the research must be simplified, is for them to understand. And thank you, Honorable Members. We have taken much of the time for a good cause.
we are going to come back. Medical Research Council, you have got that responsibility. Dr. Naidu, you have got the responsibility of simplifying. Now you must tell us, when you come back, you identified a child in Khayelitsha, and this is what you have picked up. You must come back, tell us that you have identified a child in the deep rural areas in Gombu, in Venda, in Limpopo, in KZN, so that we are able, when we go out, we are able to understand. When we are going to have a mental day in Parliament, it is not going to be about a mental day, don't do that. It must be a mental day of a different approach, content, and so as the committee working together with the department, we will try and see that in our next meeting, or should we really come up have a day that we want to have some a big day where everybody is able to see. Even if we put a stall here, stalls must not only be about trade and industry, about Department of Health, Dr. Blake, must come and say, in a particular day, we are going to have a exhibition about health and about mental health, because we can never separate what we are discussing here in terms of on what is the impact of that in terms of mental health and mental sickness. I want to, it's unfortunately they know in the committee when we talk about mental health, I know that we're not here about mental health, but whether we like it or not, this subject also touches that. The last presentation also touched into that. But what is important, what is key, is the research, and we'll be awaiting for that research. Give us that research, give us on time, so that when we go through it, we are able to, not that we're not going to do our own research for your own information. We'll do our own research, but we want to balance that with your research, which is to be more reader friendly, more accessible for the benefit of the 70% or 80% of the poor, unemployed, underemployed people of South Africa who think that drugs is there. And it's not because of their own liking, it's because of the system. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. This session, I will, as our guests are leaving, members of the committee must remain so that we carry some of our few things of the committee that we have to do. Thank you very much.
This is first of